What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Hello, and welcome to Texans on Tap. I'm Brandon Strange, not to be confused with Jags tight end Brenton Strange. I'm alongside Charlie Palillo and Josh Jordan. Read their work on sportsmap.com and follow them on X, at Palillo and at Josh Jordan 975. Gents, they say there's nothing like a win to wash away the taste of defeat. Texans hope week four is an NRG-sized bottle of Listerine to forget about the garlic cake with onion icing they were force-fed at the hands of Minnesota. As much as CJ Stroud and the Texans want nothing more than to put week three in the rearview, Jacksonville comes into NRG Sunday desperate for a win, sitting at 0-3, fresh off their own trip behind the woodshed, courtesy of the Buffalo Bills. So let's start with CJ and the walking wounded offense. Yeah, Mixon and Pierce are still banged up. We'll see what their status is. Tank Dell was injured during garbage time. And also in the category of wounded, but more wounded pride, Laremy Tunsil has been a penalty machine at this point, becoming a lightning rod of criticism. Texans are 6.5-point favorites, as I see on one book, but nothing has come easy this season. Charlie, there were some lofty visions of a high-powered Texans offense coming into this season. That has yet to come to fruition on the field. How do you like the offense's ability to bounce back against Jacksonville's defense?
You know, it's three games in, and the Texans have played one good offensive game. That's not a good ratio, but since it's just three games, if they played one more good offensive game, two out of three, that would be excellent. The Kansas City Chiefs offense is not humming yet. Of course, the Chiefs are 3-0, and the Chiefs have all the bona fides and been there, done that, so that you figure Mahomes and company will get to where they're supposed to get. The Texans do remain a question. As noted at the outset of the season, obviously off all they accomplished last year and CJ Stroud being the pivot point for making this franchise matter again, there was an overhype component. The last eight regular season games last season, the Texans offense put up more than 23 points one time. Bashed Cleveland in the playoffs, then laid a pterodactyl egg against the Ravens in the playoff exit. Well, so far this season, good output against the Colts, 19 against the Bears, and then got just smeared into the turf in Minnesota, scoring just seven. The question marks are replete. I do think it starts with that offensive line. And you mentioned the injury report. I have it as Mixon ankle, Pierce hamstring, Dell chest, Tunsil brain. And how do the Texans handle this? It's the cutting off your nose to spite your face aspect. I really think that Tunsil should have been pulled from the game for at least a series in Minnesota. But what message would he have taken from that? Would have been, wow, you must be really upset and I need to shake myself and become a professional who pays attention to the basic rules and snap count. Or, ha, blowout game, I'm just going to chill on the sideline and collect my $1.5 million for the week. You know, Blake Fisher was a second-round draft choice. He shouldn't be hopelessly overmatched if put in the game for one series if you're trying to slap Laremy Tunsil in the face and say, enough of this, or D'Amico Ryans can choose to continue to poo-poo it. But 10 penalties in three games, six against Minnesota, five of them enforced, I mean, that's beyond unacceptable. Then there are the talent questions in the offensive line. Kenyon Green looked like Tarzan in preseason. Well, as the saying goes, playing more like Jane on the field three games in. Shaq Mason, I don't know if it's just a sluggish start or tipping point as a little bit older player, has he fallen off? But the grading systems say Shaq Mason's been lousy so far. Tytus Howard maybe has been better than Tunsil through three games, but is that really lofty praise? And Juice Scruggs has played two of the three games. You hope he settles in at the center. They have no chance to have a big-time running game if the offensive line is subpar. The offensive line three games in is subpar. Furthermore, if you have no Joe Mixon, Cam Akers, 9 carries for 21 yards in Minnesota. He can't be a heavy-duty back, right? He should be the number two ahead of Pierce. He got to number one by default with both Mixon and Pierce out. And if you have both those two guys out against the Jaguars, I mean, Jacksonville's a mess right now, but has been credible defensively. Right? Miami only put up 20 on the Jags. Cleveland, 18. And then it all went to pieces in the Buffalo game. So I don't think the Texans are going to run the ball at will against Jacksonville. And so will the passing game be what we expect this passing game to be or become? Better sooner than later, because the Bills are on the schedule for the Texans a week from Sunday.
That's going to be tough. But quickly back to the penalties there, Charlie. That disappointed me a little bit. You know, easy Texans fans. I love D'Amico, but nobody's perfect. It bothered me when he was asked about the penalties. It's like, hey, do you guys have, you know, analytics to where you pay attention to what ref crews are doing, which games, and how you prepare your players for that kind of stuff? And D'Amico was like, no, we don't have to worry about that. If we coach it up right and we coach it up right, then we don't have to worry about that. Well, doesn't seem like you coached it up right, because clearly it was a huge problem in the game. And Laremy Tunsil's been getting just killed on social media this week. And if you look at it, that was the same officiating crew from the week one game, the Thursday night game, where, I mean, it was a big story because Ronnie Stanley was flagged four times for the same infraction in the first half, one they kept getting Tunsil on for not lining up properly. So to me, this is, like, come on, D'Amico. In baseball, you want to know which umpire's behind the plate just to know their tendencies. Why wouldn't you want to know which ref crew is maybe, you know, focusing on certain things of the game more than others? This clearly would have benefited you if you would have sat down with the guys and said, hey, we got to watch out for this. They really called it week one, and they'll look to do it with us. And then secondly, the Tank Dell thing kind of bothered me when D'Amico was asked about it. He's like, yeah, guys can get hurt at any time. You can't predict that stuff. Well, it's like, it was a meaningless game. It was over at that point. Davis Mills was in at quarterback. I was terrified. He was throwing up passes. I was afraid he was going to get Nico or Steph Diggs or Tank killed. I mean, at that point in the game, your quarterback's out. You're not building chemistry for next week. Tank's a smaller guy. He's shown that he's injury prone. I get it. You know, you can't have kid's gloves on all the time. But even in the moment, I was like, what's the point of this? So that kind of bothered me. Like, are we going to continue to, you know, get Tank banged up? Especially, I don't mind it. You know, guys get hurt. It's football. But don't do it in a meaningless situation. Like, make it count for something.
Look, when it's 34-7 in the fourth quarter, it's essentially a preseason game at that point. All your best players should be nowhere near the field to the extent that you can remove them, right? Not preseason where you have 90 guys on the roster. It's not college where you can empty the bench with every fourth stringer and walk on you have at your disposal. But your top tier guys and Tank Dell, the sub pint sized guy who we've already seen kind of snap like a twig before, that was very poor judgment from D'Amico. And I know a culture of toughness and, you know, hey, our guys are players and they want to go down with the ship. Well, I'm sure C.J. Stroud had a little bit of that mentality, and it was, hey, get the franchise off the field. 34-7 inside 5 minutes to go. You know what you do? You run the ball into the line, keep the clock moving, and get the hell out of there. Well, Davis Mills could get game reps, and you know, you never know. He might have to go in for an injured C.J. Stroud. Look, if that happens, the Texan season's over, right? If you're needing Davis Mills, see 2022 Houston Texans. So D'Amico's overall tenure is off to a wonderful start. The whole feel-good story of a player here who went on to sue the franchise at one point, but then comes in as a real strong coach of the year candidate. They win the division, start 2-0 this year, but he doesn't have a halo, right? D'Amico Ryans is still a young head coach who's going to make some mistakes. And in the Minnesota game, he clearly made a couple.
And I'm surprised that it's even a question of accountability that we're having here, given that, you know, D'Amico's track record and reputation. But here we are, whether it's holding Tunsil accountable for the penalties or being dismissive of being asked about using Dell in garbage time and that decision that led to the injury, D'Amico defending it by saying guys can get hurt any time of the game. We talked about it before we hit record here. If that's the case, then why are you pulling CJ Stroud if it just doesn't matter if guys can get hurt at any time? So that rationale and being dismissive, and I understand, like, probably heat of the moment too. You know, it's like you probably feel a little bit defensive about, you know, having to defend your decisions during the game. But I probably would have liked a different answer there, just to acknowledge that there's a risk. Yeah, there's an inherent risk of sending those back out there, but we thought the risk reward was worth it. Not saying like, well, guys can get hurt at any time. I just think that's a poor answer.
It's not hard. At that point in the game, Robert Woods and Xavier Hutchinson, you're in. Nico Collins and Tank Dell, you're out.
But I don't want this to seem like an overreaction. I definitely am a fan of D'Amico. I definitely enjoy him being a coach here. Those were a couple of things in which the answers and the actions seem a little bit un-D'Amico-like, which I think is what sticks out to us here.
Well, it's been such a fun start for him, and he hadn't been a head coach before. So yeah. He hasn't had to answer really any tough, legitimate questions. Right after the Baltimore playoff game, you got destroyed. Your thoughts? And what was there really to talk about in terms of detail, along with how are you going to handle things going forward, tactically, roster management, and so forth? So D'Amico has room to grow as a head coach, and as he grows, the Texans can grow with him.
Yeah. Probably maybe say victim of their own success, just, you know, the bar is set so high or expectations are so high for this team. On defense for Houston, the Texans look to keep Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville's offense contained because it has not been good. Jacksonville has averaged 13 points a game. Lawrence has only completed 53% of his passes so far. The team has only converted for 6 of 37 on third down. Not an average, but literally just 2 third down conversions each of their first 3 games. Trevor Lawrence has shown flashes, though. Some big passing plays. Week 2, he gained big yards with his feet. Are there any red flags on this Texans defense that you think Jacksonville could potentially exploit?
I'm not sure the Jaguars are good enough to exploit much of anything at this point, but I start with the interior of the Texans defensive line.
Bingo.
Aaron Jones and the Vikings, better O-line, certainly, but Travis Etienne's a decent back, not as burly as Aaron Jones, but I think you test the Texans trying to run it right down their throat. I think the fall off in talent showed in the Minnesota game, going from Rankins and Collins to Edwards and Fatu Kasi. And not that Pro Football Focus is the be-all, end-all of grading, but the Texans' D-tackles so far, not good. You know, they each had sacks in over the first couple of games, but you know what? Interior D-linemen sometimes can get sacks because they're raising holy hell and crashing and collapsing the pocket, or because you have Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson occupying multiple blockers on the outside that, unless you stink, you should be able to get some interior heat sometimes. But job one for the interior D lineman is to occupy blockers, free things up for linebackers to make tackles so running backs aren't getting to the second level untouched. And, you know, you can't give up 150 yards rushing and expect to win very often in the NFL.
Charlie, read my mind. It's right there with the D tackles because it's not just Pro Football Focus. It's what D'Amico came out and said, too. So let's put it in perspective. Over the course of the season, the Texans D tackles, according to PFF, they're second to last. Only the Cowboys are worse this year. So it's over the course of the year. It's not just one grade or one game. And if we just do look at the Vikings game, the Texans defensive tackles, 39.5 overall grade, according to PFF, and 29.2 run grade on defense with those guys. So it's a big problem. And when D'Amico talked about it, they didn't even ask him specifically. They just said, like, what'd you think about your front seven? And D'Amico came out and said, like, the interior guys have to play better. They weren't getting any push in the middle, in the pocket there on Darnold. And that's why there were so many almost sacks with the, you know, with the pass rushers, with Anderson, you know, he missed a few as well. And Hunter, and his point was, if the guys in the middle would have pushed the pocket up a little bit, then Darnold wouldn't have had anywhere to step up. And then the guys on the edge would have been able to come in and get him to the ground. But that just wasn't the case. So, you know, it's something if D'Amico's coming out and saying, like, this is a problem, these guys have to play better. And this is something we anticipated being an issue coming into the season. They didn't focus on the interior guys as much. And we're starting to see it be an issue, especially against the run. And that's that matchup you asked about, Brandon. The Jags, I think, with Etienne are going to be able to run the ball this week.
You mentioned Trevor Lawrence. I don't see it in him. He's still a young enough guy to evolve. But the Jaguars, I guess every team that has a quarterback who can jog and chew gum at the same time, if he's coming up on the end of his rookie contract, you have to give him $50 million per year. I don't think Trevor Lawrence warrants that money. He's not a tremendously accurate thrower of the football. For the big strapping guy from when he walked onto the campus at Clemson, oh, the physical prototype. I mean, it's not like he has a pop gun arm, but I don't think he has this just, oh, rifle who just makes every throw at the elite level. Now, they have O-line issues. They did take an LSU receiver in the first round, which generally is good strategy, and Brian Thomas is off to a decent start. It's not hard to be a 1,000-yard receiver in a 17-game season. It's not even averaging 60 yards per game in receptions. But Thomas, if it was a 16-game schedule, he'd be on pace for 1,000 yards. Christian Kirk, who they grossly overpaid when they signed him as a free agent, but he's their deep threat field stretcher. Texans need to be mindful of him. But I go back to the Jacksonville's offense. The production has just been crappy three games in a row. Two of the three games, they haven't managed 270 yards of offense. If the Texans' defense doesn't look good in this game, one would expect the Bills to come in and tear it apart.
You're right, Charlie. They do have those guys with Christian Kirk and Thomas Jr. that they can run, which is a little concerning. If we look at what the Texans secondary did last week, Kamari Lassiter did not have a good game. 54.5 coverage grade. There were four open targets where somebody was open and he just happened to be the closest guy to him. Jalen Petrie struggled in a similar way. 33.4 coverage grade. There were five open targets where he was the closest defender. So these Jags receivers can run. It's going to be, you know, can Trevor Lawrence get the ball to him on time and make some big plays? One thing going for the Texans is they've generated the ninth most pressure this year in the NFL at 39.4%. So hopefully this week, pass rush can speed up Trevor Lawrence and lead to a win for the Texans.
And if Sam Darnold has taught us anything, it's that sometimes the right system can make a quarterback look completely different. Again, Lawrence hasn't done it consistently, to your point, Charlie, but he has shown flashes. And so I don't think I'm ready just yet to call what he is at the pro level. But he's not going to be changing systems before the Texans see him. So that does play in Houston's favor. Before we get into final predictions, give me some X factors that you're looking for in this matchup and final overall thoughts for Jags Texans.
I mean, I expect the Texans to bring it, right? It was an abominable performance. But hey, maybe Minnesota's going to turn out to be 13-4 and a real Super Bowl contender in the NFC. And you look back and go, okay, getting absolutely trashed there. That was a bad, bad game. But a little context, especially in the rearview mirror. Jacksonville, the Jaguars' mentality, I'm curious. You know, they're close to where they could enter spit the bit territory. Doug Peterson, the head coach. Remember, beyond the midpoint of last season, the Jaguars came to NRG Stadium, beat the Texans to go to 8-3 in absolute command of the AFC South, and they completely fall apart from there. They win one more game, and I don't know if it's a hangover from that or other talent issues, but the Jaguars appear to be the team that's fallen and certainly hasn't gotten up. Can they get up? You know, the cornered animal can be the most dangerous. Well, not if the cornered animal is just torn up and waiting to die. So especially if the Texans can get on top early. Tunsil, remember the snap count. And Josh Hines-Allen is an elite pass rusher coming from the edge. We'll see where the Jaguars move him around. But Jacksonville, while a horrible 0-3 and recency bias, 47-10, they led at Miami 14-0. Right? They lost to Cleveland in a one-score game. The Browns do have an elite defense. The Jaguars scored only 13 points. Well, not like a lot of teams are going to put 30 up on the Browns. Jacksonville, this is it, right? The Jaguars lose this game to go 0-4 and three games behind the Texans. The season's about over. Granted, the additional wild card was added in each conference in 2020, so this is the fifth season of it. But only one team in NFL history has made the playoffs from an 0-4 start. I would deem it highly unlikely the Jaguars would be the second. So I think their season, the viability of their season rides on this game. Do they come in here and play like it? That's my wild card.
Yeah, I have a couple here. Evan Ingram, their tight end, he's been dealing with a hamstring injury so far this year. He missed practice again on Wednesday. He's questionable. So that could be big because Doug Peterson loves to kind of rely on some athletic tight ends in his offense. You brought up Strange earlier, Brandon. Ingram's the guy that they paid a lot of money. He's really explosive. So the Texans kind of dodge a bullet here if he's unable to go again this week. And then kind of my big, yay, this is exciting. I think this could be a big game for Nico Collins. And while the Texans haven't gotten off and played extremely well on offense every game this year, Nico Collins has been pretty fantastic overall. And this matchup is actually great for him because the Jags lead the league in man and press coverage. Even when they were facing Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Amari Cooper, they all pressed him. So you have to think, are they going to press Nico too? And I bring that up. Why is that? Nico is the best wide receiver, according to the metrics here. He's the best receiver in the NFL versus man and versus press coverage. He's at over 20% on first downs per route run. So that's against press and against man. So Nico is first in both of those categories in the NFL. So if they want to press Nico and they want to play man coverage with him, with CJ Stroud throwing the ball, that is a huge benefit for the Houston Texans. And the other thing, the Jags, they don't pressure very well. They're 11th worst in the NFL in pressure percentage at 30.7%. So you get Nico in his best optimal situation in press and man coverage, and they're not going to be able to bring the type of pressure that the Vikings were able to bring. I think we could see Nico go off this week.
Yeah, I'm going to be Captain Obvious here, and I'm going to look at penalties and sacks. Jacksonville has averaged 7 penalties per game. Houston has had double-digit penalties in their last two games for an average of 100 yards surrendered on penalties per game. I need to see Houston clean that up. That's unsustainable. And each of the teams has been bad at protecting their quarterback. 12 sacks surrendered by each team through the first three games. If Houston's passing attack wants to get to that next level, again, I know I'm being obvious here, they have to protect Stroud. If they want to see what this team can be and really realize their potential on offense, Stroud has to stay clean and has to be under less duress during the game. Final score predictions. Charlie, you're up.
Okay, a couple quick final points into that. Hey, Bobby Slowick, don't ask Cade Stover to block Josh Hines-Allen one-on-one. Ever. The silliness that they did against John Grenard in Minnesota last week. Over-under on Tunsil penalties, and I'm sure the crowd will be prepared to and should be prepared to boo him vociferously if he's guilty of a false start, much
like
less lining up illegally. You know, the Texans offense just has not gone off consistently enough for me to believe they're going to pour it on Jacksonville unless the Jaguars curl up in the feline fetal position. And conversely, the Jaguars offense has done nothing in three games. So I will go Texans 6.5 is the number we're working with. I'll go Texans 20, Jaguars 13.
There you go. I'm kind of in a similar boat here where I don't think Vegas has really got it right with the Texans. The Texans, they don't cover very often. And last week they were predicted to win and they got blown out. So I'm going to go with that trend this week. I don't think the Texans cover the 6.5. I am going to lean to them winning, but I think it's going to be a close game. Go Texans 27, Jags 24.
I'm close. I'm 27-20. I do have them covering. I don't really know what I base it off, just a gut instinct sometimes. So we'll see how that goes. But vociferous, for those wondering, this is vehement or clamorous. So leave it to Charlie to give us an SAT word on the way out the door. At least I have
to. I know our audience, Brandon. They all got it.
Okay, well, it's just me then. Well, for the me's in the audience, that's what it means. I saved you a Google search. That's going to be it for this episode of Texans on Tap. Just a quick note out the door for Astros fans. The three of us will be live following every wild card series game next week, which starts on Tuesday. That's over on our other channel, Sports Map Houston. And for Texans fans, we hope to see you back here live on YouTube Sunday late afternoon following Jags Texans. Come on in, react with us. Hopefully we're breaking down a Houston win. Until then, go Texans.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
What do one of the world's top food cities, a nationally celebrated zoo and science museum, and a Condé Nast Traveler Top 10 Best Big City in the Country have in common? Yes, it's Columbus. This isn't just a stop on the map. It's where award-winning flavors, unforgettable family moments, and big city buzz come together. Let's be honest, Columbus is turning heads. For top-of-the-line discoveries in your own backyard, visit experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.